As we escalate speed and interest to the end of the meeting, Glenn is a hard act to top, but I can think of no one better qualified to attempt to give a wonderful talk to conclude the meeting than Dava Sobel. Many or all of you have read her wonderful books, especially Galileo's Daughter and Longitude. I don't want to say Latitude, but Glenn has been concentrating on getting to polar latitudes. So I guess then my introduction will say we are going to move from the latitude considerations of Glenn Schneider to the longitude considerations of Dava Sobel, who is now writing a play about Copernicus that I hope we will all be able to see soon. And please talk about Copernicus now, Dava Sobel.
Thank you very much. Of course, I too want to thank Patrick and Joanne and Ed Krupp for allowing us to be in this wonderful space. And I have been at work for the last 2 years on a play about Copernicus. I've actually had this idea for 30 years, but I haven't had the courage to attempt it until now. And the idea came to me when I read Arthur Kessler's book, The Sleepwalkers. I don't know if any of you have read that. Kessler really didn't like Copernicus at all, called his book The Book Nobody Read, and thought he was an incredibly dreary character. But in the book, he told the story of how Copernicus was convinced to publish his crazy idea, because he had actually given up on publishing it. It was something he came to fairly early in his life, and he spent much of his adult life working on it, trying to get together a proof. And he finally convinced himself that people would just find the idea laughable. I don't think it's true that he feared repercussions from the church. He was in the employ of the church. And those of you who have seen the book, De Revolutionibus, know that it is dedicated to the Pope. So it's pretty clear that he was not worried about that. But the laughing aspect, he was very worried about. So he had finished the work and shelved it when a stranger arrived unannounced, a young man, 25, who traveled about 200 miles from another country because he had heard about this work and wanted to learn about it. Why? Because he was an astrologer. But he was very interested in Copernicus's work and managed to convince him to take this young man who was Lutheran. This was the height of the Protestant Reformation. So Copernicus, the Polish or German Catholic, takes in this young Lutheran for 2 years, and they work on the manuscript and get it into publishable condition. And then this young man, whose name was Reticus, left with the manuscript and got it published in Nuremberg. And I thought, what could he have said to convince this elderly personage who had decided against publication? That must have been some conversation. And I thought it would make a great play, because, of course, nobody knows what they said to each other, so you would have to make it up. But there's enough surviving material. There's De Rev, there's Reticus's first account of Copernicus's work, there were letters. So it always seemed to me that it was a doable project. But as I said, I was afraid of it. And I do have some visual things to show you here. First, I want to show you this picture of Copernicus. I apologize for the glare on the image of Copernicus himself, but we all know that's iconic. Somebody just gave me this mouse pad with Copernicus's face on it. I think everybody has seen this portrait of him because it is the only one. And it is based on a self-portrait that he made during his student days. And that's why he's wearing that nice red jerkin. That was what students wore. But am I the only one who sees an uncanny resemblance between Copernicus and the curator of his birthplace museum in Torun? I mean, I just thought this was so stunning, I could hardly listen to what she was saying to me. Before we had Fred Espenac and Jay Anderson, eclipse predictions were the province of someone named Stoeffler, who published something called the Calendarium, which had eclipse predictions in it. And this is actually Copernicus's copy of that book. And the books behind it are his library, what remains of his actual library, which is now in Uppsala. And there's a close-up of that page. And the handwritten notes on the page are Copernicus's notes, because he did observe 4 partial solar eclipses. He never saw a total. It's amazing to just reconsider how fortunate we all are to be able to see this phenomenon so easily when the person who made perhaps the most enormous change in astronomy in history never got to see one. Owen Gingrich at Harvard, he's retired now, but he's still at Harvard, still in his office, gave me the courage to attempt my play. Some of you may know that Owen has spent the past 30 plus years tracking down every extant copy of the first and second editions of De Rev, which he published in this census. And he was also inspired by Arthur Koestler. As he was thinking, gee, if it was the book nobody read, if only 10 people read it, who were those 10 people? And he sat down one day and figured out who they probably were. And he happened to be in the UK, and he was visiting the Edinburgh Observatory, and they had a first edition Copernicus. And when he looked through it, it was completely annotated throughout. And he thought, if nobody read it, what are the odds that the first copy I look at has been not only read, but studied? And that gave him the idea to try to track them all down and see who had written what in the margins. And this was a fascinating exercise, and he's chronicled all of that. And it's ironic that the cover of his book, of course, has a diamond ring on it. I asked why he chose that for the cover, since Copernicus never did see a total. But this was something done by the publisher for no apparent reason, as so often happens in publishing. As we know, the concept of editorial judgment, something like an oxymoron. I hear a lot about it. In Poland, you could hardly take 2 steps without encountering a statue of Copernicus. And this shows Copernicus and another person you may recognize from the Galapagos legend Thomas Eclipse. Mazur. This is Thomas Mazur.
Doubting Thomas.
Doubting Thomas, yes, who was afraid we would not see totality, but we were fortunate that his dream was wrong. Actually, he was slighted. He was actually dreaming, he told me, of clouds after totality. But on that trip, I happened to sit next to him at dinner one evening, and he mentioned he was from Poland. I said that I would be going there for research on this play project. And he immediately offered to take the week off work and serve as my translator and guide. Now, I know eclipse chasers are nice people, but that really set a new standard, I thought. And he's actually done that for me twice now. I have another picture of him just so you can really see him, because I don't think he showed up all that well. Nice person. And this is the cathedral at Fromburg, where Copernicus spent most of his life. He was a canon of the church. It meant taken minor orders. Mostly he was an administrator. He took care of the church-owned property, he collected rents, settled disputes among the peasants who worked on the lands, and he was multi-talented. He was also a medical doctor, he was personal physician to the bishop, and he came up with an economic theory, which is known today as Gresham's Law. But the idea that if you have bad currency circulating at the same time as good currency, which has the full weight of silver or gold, then people will hoard the good currency. And so the bad currency drives the good currency out of circulation. He was the first one to formulate that idea. So he was brilliant and was able to do his assigned duties quickly, and that left him a lot of time to devote to astronomy. And he worked at least 30 years on his handwritten manuscript, which still exists, which is a very unusual thing. None of Galileo's manuscripts survive. But Copernicus's manuscript can still be seen because he refused to part with it. He insisted that there be a copy made, and that copy survives. So while I was in Poland, I met Jarosław Wlodarczyk, who is a historian of science affiliated with the Polish Academy of Sciences. And he got very interested in Copernicus's eclipse observation. And he noticed that when he compared them to modern observation, Copernicus's determination of the degree of eclipse was low in every instance. And so that suggested some kind of systematic error based on his methodology. Nowhere does Copernicus explain what his methodology was for observing eclipses. This is just to prove that I really did talk to Wlodarczyk and get his permission to share these results with you. This is the tower in the cathedral wall that belonged to Copernicus. Each of the canons had a safe house in the wall. They actually lived just outside the cathedral wall. But when they were under attack, they could retreat to these chambers. And he had his library there and his study. He didn't observe there because the view wasn't good, but certainly he worked in this tower over many years. Here's another view of it. And this will show you how eclipses were measured. The idea was that he must have used a pinhole camera setup. And on the wall where you cast your reflection, you would draw a circle and then divide the circle, put a diameter line, and have that divided into 12 equal parts. And then the eclipse would be measured according to those points. And as I said, he was consistently low because he didn't understand that you're supposed to subtract the diameter of the aperture from your distance measurements. And because Rheticus was with Copernicus during two of these eclipse observations, he carried the technique back to Wittenberg. These diagrams were actually published in a book in which Erasmus Reinhold commented on an earlier theory of Feuerbach. And Reinhold printed these diagrams and described the pinhole technique. It's the first written account of that in astronomy. And Reinhold also didn't understand about subtracting the aperture. And it was, but this method started to be used by other astronomers. Here's a picture from a publication by Gemma Frisius, who also recommended that people use the pinhole technique. One of the other interesting things Vladarczyk did was to find another series of eclipses that had probably been done by looking at the reflection of the eclipse in water. And in that series, two of the measurements were low and two were high. So you got a truer picture of the degree of eclipse by that method, because you didn't have the extra calculation to do. So this idea was passed from person to person, and it wasn't until Kepler looked at it and looked at the problems with Tycho's data and figured out the right way to analyze this kind of observation. And these pictures are so rudimentary looking, and yet this is the best people could do in that yeasty time, and when the whole universe was turning inside out. And it's been a long, wonderful day. I don't think I need to say much more than this, but I will be happy to answer questions about Copernicus or Galileo or anything you want to talk about in the time remaining. Thank you.
Well, I thank you, David, for a most unexpected and interesting conclusion about Copernicus and about the sun and about eclipses. Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Deva? Jack?
I don't want to turn off the question and project the proportion of the image of the object. So why really subtract the
question is basically, can you say a bit more about subtracting the aperture?
I could actually give anyone who's interested a copy of the paper with all the formulas. I'd be happy to do that for you. You get an inverted image and it's proportional, but you underestimate the magnitude unless you make that correction. I also should have said that the idea of the pinhole observation is ancient, and Arabs had been using it probably in the 10th century to look at eclipses, but it isn't clear that information got through to the Latin West. Copernicus apparently did have a means of learning what Arab astronomers had been doing, because he used some of the Arab mathematicians' calculations in his theory of the structure of the universe. And although the route of transmission isn't clear, in the time he was studying, he went to school in Italy, so he was there for years, and manuscripts were coming into Italy from all over and being translated. So almost certainly he learned of these things at that time.
Well, thank you very much.